Welcome to Windows into Eternity with Almeen. This hour you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almeen.
Back with you. I am growing very fond of these weekly meetings that we have together, and I can feel your presence, and I receive your emails, and our group is growing, and it makes my heart sing. Well, we've got you here with us today, and he's prepared some questions, so we won't keep you much longer. We'll just dive right into them. Rogier, what would you like to know?
Well, not just me, but also just questions I receive. One of them is actually based on wrapping something up, which we discussed in a previous episode, namely what you were saying about that which had been done to prepare the land masses and the oceans to, move in, you know what I mean, I'm not exactly sure how to phrase it, but could you explain that, what it was?
Yes, and just to catch those people up that didn't actually get a chance to listen to our last episode that we have on the had on the radio, we spoke about the fact that there were keys given and wheels that were being turned and so on to prepare the oceans to unite into one place and the land masses to unite in one place. To be exact about those wheels, I will give you a little bit of description of what they are, but the point is that this will be done effortlessly and painlessly. It will be instantaneous transformation as we enter this golden age in which the holy city of the mother and father become visible. So the wheel that unites the oceans was received by the oracle for the sacred order of the white dove. And a very similar wheel appeared in front of the oracle in Canada for the oracle for the Order of the Serpent, appeared in front of her face. There's a key to turn the wheel, and there's a wheel itself, and the wheel is specific to uniting the oceans of the earth. There are actually two wheels that look a bit in their shape like a Pepsi bottle cap or a bottle's cap that has a serrated edge. There are two of those, and the serrated edges fit together. Then you have the wheel that must be turned to unite the oceans. Then there's a key to turn the wheel. And so then that is for the oceans, and it had to be turned. And we needed six whale races to turn the wheel. And these whale races were specifically the ones that we have spoken about in past episodes that came back from where they had been sent. We spoke about the very poignant story of how Mother sent them to a planet in Sirius because of the fact that the Sirian planet was pulsing as an opposite pole with the Earth. And, you know, if it went awry, so would the Earth, which is a very pivotal point. And so some of those races came back from there. Some are not much bigger than a dolphin, but the six whale races knew that they had to come together to turn the wheel at some point. Then there was a very extraordinary design given that we took down, but it's an actual something. It's not just a flat design, and it's called the Drop of Life, to create one landmass and one ocean. And it is to be dropped into the ocean by the Infinite Mother when the Holy City materializes. And there are multiple segments of this little design, you know, this drop design. It looks like there's a flower in it with eight petals. And then there's these multiple sections around it. And then the outline of the drop has itself sections in it. They represent the races of the earth, those segments. And it's called Akutura Amu Ula, Drop of Life. So let me just give you a little bit. I've got one of my manuscripts here of a conversation that I had with the mother regarding this that I wrote down. I said, Mother, what are the wheels the whales are giving us? What are they for? Well, the wheels with the spirals have to be turned to unite the oceans into one. And the wheel they call the key will be placed on top of the wheels on the ocean floor so they can be turned, which is, of course, the key. So how many wheels are there on the ocean floor that must be turned? Two. The one where that the seven whales have to turn is the key for the other wheel. And then I said, I remember the decree going forth from you, Mother, that the keys on land are to be turned. When will the land masses unite, as well as the oceans? The moment I put the drop of life into the ocean, this will be at the time the holy city of the Father and I materialize. So in the twinkling of an eye, painlessly, exactly. And we had a transmission from a very small gray whale that I'll just share with you as well. And it says, we are the smallest of the whales. We may be small, but we are strong. And oh, so fast. We love to play. We resemble what is called dolphin. Our noses aren't so long. We pull our weight when turning the wheel in the sea, releasing the oceans from being separate. Thank you for singing us home. And then they gave the oracle a song to sing that helped guide them home. So, you know, that this was part of this receiving of these wheels. So anyway, that is the best I can answer that one. Was there anything that you needed to ask on that?
Well, only then sort of what exactly determines when this movement would start to occur, because we say, well, when the city is there, but that kind of shifts the question only.
It does. And Rogier, I'm really so sorry because of this issue of exponential growth. It's not like we can predict things linearly. And yesterday when we taped the previous one that they would have heard a week ago by the time our listeners hear this one, a fascinating topic came up, that there is a prediction device, that a most incredible device designed by the cat people, the Jongala Brook, that can assist to track possibilities of the future. Now that linear astrology and things like that just simply cannot, because things are exponentially growing. One person knows something, and bing, everybody knows it. And so, you know, until I sit down and actually do that device, I'm not going to, and you know, I don't know how long that'll take. It might take me a few weeks, and I'm in the middle of finishing up three other books. But if that device will not be something that, you know, that I can just do overnight. I don't know what the possibilities are. And of all the possibilities in the cosmos, the one with the most contingencies is the Holy City. Because when the Holy City materializes, it shuts down the activity period of cosmic creation. And what I mean by that is a very important statement, because I've actually never made it before, because God didn't know it before. It's coming through me, not from me. But it is saying that everything pulses. When the city appears, the pulse of active life creating and refining it will have stopped. And then for a very long time is a reign of peace. Aha, now I understand, because I couldn't get why so many of these libraries spoke about the reign of peace, the reign of peace, and I started to wonder, well, I mean, why didn't they call it the reign of glory, or, you know, the reign of great light or of love or something, always the reign of peace. And it is that striving ceases, because we then rest. It's time then for the receiving, not the giving of growth. It comes effortlessly. And so, you know, growth actually stops. It's the information to promote growth. So there are pulsations of activity and non-activity. When that city is materialized on Earth, our activity stops. So now we can see how incredibly important it is that we don't actually have it come 1 second too soon, because then it's like a flower that's developed but has one petal only partially developed. It won't develop after that flower has opened. It develops beforehand. So once that flower is fully opened, that's the end of the development of that flower. From there on, it just blooms. So, you know, every single little buttonhole has to have its button in it. Everything has to be in its place. Everything has to be sorted out every single day. Like moments before I got on this phone to do this recording, Mother had me put in the Book of Life that it is impossible for one being to obscure the clarity of another. I had to put it not only in the Book of Life, but speak it also on her behalf, because she was speaking it in her language, into the Book of the One Life, which means Mother herself can never be fooled by her creations mirroring to her that which she is not. And because she did not have enough self-knowledge when this began, she didn't know what was and what wasn't. Can you just hold a second? Mother is saying, oh my goodness, Mother is saying, you did not complete that. So I will ask Mother then, which is the part that I forgot to say in the book or didn't hear her say in her language and didn't end up putting in the book. She said, you were too busy grabbing a plate of cereal. So I guess, you know, I didn't hear her. So, okay, let's just have Mother say it. And then I'll put it in the book after her in here in physicality. Ishtaminach Heshketes Asa Ishpikiana Ushutuhna Veshbiakenite Inakvaharach Ilkerita Ushnu Sata Minhuruh Karata Inikvi Ite Bishbu Utu Unu Ushihia Kavahihaka Unu Uti. Self-knowledge is carried in every moment, whenever it is to be gained. In this way, Mother has self-knowledge in all moments. Every moment self-knowledge is gained is exponentially and immediately transferred to all other moments. In this way, Mother has enough self-knowledge at the beginning of the individuation of life that she knows exactly what she is and what she isn't. In this way, there is never any need for illusion to form, when illusion means a mirroring of that which Mother is not. Pichyachayine ushvastava minuchvata anash bespiakiu utuh nivitya ishata usvastava unush. Self-knowledge is effortlessly gained by putting all possible equations together of that which is. Mother, in every moment, does this. She therefore at no time needs her creations to teach her, to mirror to her the reality of her own being. Ishpatach navasutu ki atana uveshtana vasut. My mother is saying, my creations, Mother's creations are made to delight her. They are made because they bring her all the beautiful emotions that can be felt at the level in which Mother exists, which are not the same as the emotions felt by her creations. They are of a more refined substance. Pirkuyita anashvasta, perpiakya unush, At no time shall the emotions or the pure frequencies or the pure states of being that are produced by mother for her children enter her being, for they pollute her being in that they are also a creation. Let it be written in the book of the one life. My brothers and sisters, it's time for our first commercial break. We'll be back in a few moments.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almin experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego. In 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book had been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Almin's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almin's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
So here, did that answer everything that we needed to on the gates and the wheels in the ocean?
Well, I have a few questions, but, well, first of all, if there are any other gates in the ocean besides the one you mentioned?
Well, actually, there is. When we opened the libraries of Australia, which is off the coast, there are libraries in Australia, but these libraries were off the coast. It spoke in the libraries of Australia, which is the libraries of the octopus, sacred in the realm of innocence. I write these words to you, so you can open yet another gate with this message I have for you. This is a translation out of these libraries. Once you get to the library far under the sea, white veils will embrace you, and you will again remember me. Your joy will burst and your light increase. Darkness in some places then will cease. The sight of you will then be more glorious than ever. This was received by the Oracle Denisa, who is our Colorado facilitator, and from the guardian of the libraries called Buluga. And Buluga and Bubula are two octopus beings. They're highly intelligent beings. They're not like, you know, the average octopus, that were also appeared to the Oracle Efa. Efa's from Poland. And in the floor, ocean floor, the door is to be found. Look next to the ship where the back has broken down. It is buried in sand and covered with rocks, but you can enter if your heart is pure. You need a key to open the door. The key is a wheel. We'll give it to you. Be careful. Watch for the white being lingering at the door. And the symbol of the octopus libraries, was given to the Oracle Karen, and that is actually the Oracle of the Dove. So we had a communication from Bubula, the keeper of the key. He says, Ifa asked the Oracle, she said, do you want to give me any shape, a key? Yes, it is a circle. It is a key to open the underwater. It is the key to open the door underwater for the next libraries. The door is next to an old ship. See how the different oracles are receiving the same thing? That lies on the bottom of the ocean. We like to swim in this ship. through its opening, we have to only watch for this big creature so it does not swallow us. It protects the door to the library. It is like an octopus. It is all white and has these long arms, 5 foot long each, and a big head. Now we give you the key and we go. We waited long enough. Thank you very much for your patience, she says. I'm sorry that I was so busy lately. Please give me the key. Yes, we know. Here is a key. And then she gave a key. And Bubula is a fish-like being. And then Buluga was the one that was, in fact, the great octopus being. It's fascinating because, see, they speak about the veils, white. And once you get to the library, to the sea, white veils will embrace you. The white veils, my brothers and sisters, because one of our oracles was sent there, and I was sent there to translate pieces from that library. The white veils is the arms of the big octopus beluga. And so when the oracle in Colorado picked up, once you get to the library under the sea, white veils will embrace you, and you will again remember me. And what he does is when you go down there, this massive octopus comes and wraps these white arms around you. That's the white veils. And you have to remember him, because only those going there have already met with him, because he comes to give you a key or he comes to call you. And so, you know, that's another gate. There is actually yet another gate. Let me see if I can find it off the top of my head, because it came through one of the oracles. But what it is that it was the gate that unlocked the many beings that were trapped under the sea in the crust of the earth. Because apparently at some point our oceans were literally boiling, and many beings went into the crust of the earth, and there was a gate and a key that set them free. And so that is another gate and yet another key. And, you know, if I find it during our next break, I'll read it to the listeners. But that's it.
But this white being at the door is supposed to be this octopus then?
Yes, he is. Yeah. Bubula, or whatever the little one's name is that gave her the key, is actually a fish being. And it looks like a fish. Buluga, I believe, I don't have it now in front of me anymore, but is actually the octopus, yes. And he's the one whose arms are like a white veil in front of the door.
Okay, now, one thing I wanted to ask, well, actually two things, but first of all, about this pulsation and the reign of peace that we spoke of earlier.
Yes.
I was actually wondering, actually two things about that. First of all, I suppose you could also turn it around and say that when there is no more need for this pulsation and activity, then this reign of peace will come, rather than saying that then simply all the pulsation will stop, because I was thinking if you put it in terms of striving, then for the time being there may still be a need for us to strive towards things.
Here there are a couple of things, and I'm not entirely sure that I understood you correctly, so if I don't answer it, please just tackle it all over again. But here's the skinny. See, it's not that there ever will be a cessation for the need of pulsing. We do pulse. But, see, I didn't know this till I spoke it on this station. So I don't know it at all, that there was this huge cycle that the activity has to get to a closure. It has to complete its activity, and then we go into this place of rest. I had no idea that's what we were looking at. But, you know, we have been eliminating polarity. What the difference is between just pulsation and polarity, as the way we've used the word, we can certainly just say polarity has changed the way it is and still call it polarity. But for the moment, let's just talk about pulsation and polarity. Polarity has been, and we used this example before of two people sitting on a chair opposite one another and throwing a pillow back and forth. Now, I have the pillow. You know, I'm the activity cycle. So when I have the pillow, the activity cycle is totally dominant. The other one that doesn't have the pillow is totally inert. They're not moving. You know, they're not doing anything. Then I throw it back. Then the one that is the receptive one holds the pillow. Now we're in a state of total rest. So that there's this linear alternating between cycles. We said that mother then forms a unified field. And the unified field is where it's not that the one goes totally dormant when the other one has the pillow, because they're sitting side by side on a couch and both have one side of that pillow. And it's just moved more towards the one, then it moves more towards the other, but no one lets go of the pillow. It clearly, we have found the biggest cause of polarity that mother needs to heal. And what that means is that the time, the golden era of peace and the era of activity needs to be totally superimposed over one another, making a field, and that it isn't that this totally one is not available when the other one is prevalent. It's that there is an integration. And when the field forms, two people sitting on a couch holding one pillow, it's just that now it's a little more dominant this way, now it's a little more dominant that way. But it's integrated a unified field. We have just uncovered what, at least thus far, I mean, I keep saying I don't know how it can get any bigger, and then it does. But so far, we've just uncovered the largest cause of polarity. If that's there, we still have linear time. And that means the innocence was not at 100%.
But when you say if that's there, you're referring to pulsation?
The pulsation, the way it is, where because we're in a cycle of activity, the entire reign of peace isn't present. That has to be changed.
Well, yeah, because that would have been my follow-up question, namely if that pulsation isn't about linearity as well.
You're quite right, Rogier. You saw it exactly. And see, I didn't know it before. When either in the break I can talk to Mother about this, or, you know, if it's a long conversation, then I have to wait till afterwards. But I will try in our next break to talk to Mother about this and see, you know, if this can be done at this point, or do we first have to just finish the cycle of activity to be able to instigate this new way? What is, you know, is there something I'm missing? Because even though it looks apparent to me that they need to be integrated, nothing is apparent in this work. All I know when I wake up each day, I say to myself, I know nothing. Because things are so complex. And the simplistic explanations that are given oftentimes by teachers, you know, and the need to know and the need to do gets in the way. And you spoke about this yesterday or here. Because, you know, they know something needs to be closed, so they close it. They close some gate because they picked up some gate needs to be closed, so they just close it. But they don't know what gate. If there's a gate that's open that needs to be closed, that's because there's something in Mother's body that's open that needs to be closed. If we don't find the principle lying behind it and just willy-nilly go close a gate because we think there's a gate to close, even though it should have been closed, it does not promote an evolution of life. Because if something in Mother's body is open that should be closed, it simply is going to manifest somewhere else. You know, this is a totally fluid reality, and it responds to the one real point, which is the physical mother. And if we just change the screen, it goes right back to the projector and just projects another image.
All right. Now,
in fact, you know what? We could take our break right now, because it's been 15 minutes, believe it or not. This went very quickly. And I will talk to Mother and see what must be done.
A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. The Gift of the Unicorns is now available from Al Mean. The magical book answers the question, do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
So my brothers and sisters, I'm actually in the middle of a conversation with the mother, and what I'll do is I'll just tell it to you as it's happening. So I asked Mother whether or not this linear pulsation is something that needs to be healed. In other words, does it need to be fixed? And she said, look at your own words. You answered yourself. And I'm saying, what words were that? And Mother said, you cannot clean up the projector. The projection, you cannot clean up the screen. The projector will just project it again. So I said to Mother, do you mean that this large cycle of activity and the large reign of peace is a projection of something that is within you? And that is how far we came. And so now I wait for Mother's answer. Ihka una ash. Pispata huna vapi. Ihka ushna asta. Your perspective needs to always be at the place where life originates from as you seek the answers of life. In other words, Mother means herself. Everything needs to be changed by inner self that out there is being reflected. Other than our, you know, our individual choices that we make. One day you will find even the individual choices you make. So I ask Mother now, but Mother, where does this originate from? This, when there's activity, there isn't a reign of peace. When there's a reign of peace, there isn't activity. I presume that it originates in the mother herself. Yes, you are correct. That is the source. So Mother says she sleeps and she wakes. She has awake time and she has sleep time. And she says, that is the origin of those large cycles of trillions and trillions and trillions of years of activity and rest.
But which one would be the wake time and which one would be the sleep time then?
We have been in the wake time.
Well, so how do we reconcile that? So
the activity time.
Yeah, okay, but how do we reconcile that with this notion of the, which I'm not sure if we've actually discussed that already or not, but with this notion about the mother having been in a coma.
We've not discussed that, and that is something separate. It has nothing to do with this particular aspect. It is just one of the causes of the fall, many layers down. Ishba kutahna visa. Kikiana ushvasta. Rochir mishpiki inesh. Kuvahi hachka ereknesta baush. Rochir's heart will find peace when it truly knows what mind cannot, that there is a level at which there is only perfection, that all such layers of the fall are but superficial layers of roles that have been played. Underneath it all, the script always has been perfect. Bikaineshva, tu anas, truly feel this with your heart. Kiahta ineshba, kina pa'uta, and the reign of peace will be begun. So Mother wishes me now to repeat after her into the Book of the One Life and my brothers and sisters, at the largest scale ever, life changes in this moment. Kiach kayinishta unasvaba, perpakuhi anash, hishvasta ekete, unavivika nash, permikia unush, stavach. From this moment on, Mother no longer alternates between periods of sleep and awakening. She rests while there is activity, and there is activity while she rests. Let it be understood that the pulsating between activity and rest, between doingness and beingness, still takes place, but there is never a complete cessation, a complete ceasing of one cycle for the other to begin. Let these words be written this holy day in the Book of the One Life. You'll have to do some talking. I'm very expanded right now.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if there was anything.
I know. Me neither.
But was this one thing which you want to ask about? Is this the new language then that you were speaking?
No, it wasn't. I've been speaking it for Mother, but not on the line. Not on the phone. But I've been speaking it in when I've been putting things in the book.
Okay,
I can certainly speak it for them, but and it's important.
I just thought it sounded different. But what I wanted to ask was actually...
You know why it might sound different to you here is when there is a new vocabulary, when there are terms and things we haven't used before. The words are strange sounding to me too.
Okay. All right. Well, what I wanted to ask actually was about this whole this structure that's now sort of in place and or taking shape with all these oracles around the world. How does it work in the sense that what exactly coordinates, so to speak, their accessing of information?
That's a very, very good question. We have said how things are now no longer linear. And you can see when periods are, now we're active, now we're not, now we're active, now we're not, it's a linear progression. Things are now integrated because it's the healing of that which was separated out back into its own oneness. And so light no longer flows the way we think that it should, which is linearly. You know, man has kept some of that illusion for himself in place, but there is no illusion about that anywhere in the cosmos. It behaves as though it were sheets, as though it's fields. And I commented either yesterday or the day before that on interdimensional photography, we're noticing this different of light flowing like water from a source. And so the point is that I'm having a hard time forming my
words. Asking about the coordination of the information of the source.
Yes. So in other words, light is information that's been accessed. The more you learn about life, the more you change the known into the unknown into the known through your experience, the greater the light becomes, because it brings more and more accessed information. So what we have now is the fact that when something is known in the Pleiades, it's known on Earth. It's exponential. There's this massive explosion of information. So to explain what you're here is talking about, because we were speaking about that prior to the show, I used to think, you know, I used to take a year to write a book, and then Mother gave me Ring of Truth in August when the polarity in the cosmos changed, and she said light workers must know this, so this book has to be in the printer's hands by the 1st of December, and I had basically, you know, 3 months to write it. Then, as I was writing it, the fairies came and said, you can photograph our world and you can get our magic, but you have to do it all in 1 week. That's in the middle of writing Ring of Truth in 3 months. You know, and no sooner had I finished those two books when the libraries of Isis opened and Mother had me go there and take one set of plates and start to translate it. And as I was doing that, she sent the Darklings to me and the Unicorns and the Pegasus and some other groups to give me their information. So I was writing Isis' book, which is Opening the Doors of Heaven, and translating that and receiving the History of the Cycles and so forth for the book, The Gift of the Unicorns. Those two books were being simultaneously produced. Currently, there are the following books being produced, and this is leading me to answer Ruhir's question, so bear with me. Currently, we are producing, we're in the final editing stages for Windows into Eternity. Windows into Eternity is the most incredible glimpse into the infinite being. It's not received from any group of beings. You know, there's bits and pieces in from beings that came in and so on as they came in from other kingdoms that hadn't been there before. But the whole book was given to me by the mother herself and is the most phenomenal insight into her being. We've got that one being edited. Then we started a book 2 months ago that is virtually finished. It's called Secrets of the Ancients. It's being typed. And the Secrets of the Ancients is the information that has been pouring forth out of the libraries. And it's being assisted by the Order of the Serpent Mound. The Order of the Serpent Mound is totally responsible for that book. So that is currently being typed. I wrote half of it from Revelations with Mother, and it deals with the formation of the Order of the White Dove as well as the Order of the Serpent. Some of its information is in there, some of also in Windows into Eternity. But the Secrets of the Ancients is currently being typed up by the Sacred Order of the Serpent Mount. Then, the day that book, Mother gave me a closing to write for that book. I wrote the closing when I was in Toronto, my first day there, and that was a few weeks ago. And in that week, the Kachina tribes came back, and we took all the hundreds of photographs. I've sort of, you know, taken 25 of them for the Aruba Firina website that's coming. But the information for that book is currently still being received. I am now on Library 84. I have to go to Library 129. The oracles are receiving the rest of the information. I only write one page of translation out of every library. They are receiving the beings, the keys, the information that's peripheral information for the libraries. On half of the book, Secrets of the Ancients, that information was being produced by the oracles and masters of the Order of the Serpent Mount. So, you know, that is three books currently being written. However, then the Order of the Unicorns decided that they wanted to create an encyclopedia of all the white magic incantations of Windows into Eternity, of Secrets of the Ancients, of all these different beings coming in and giving me incantations. There's an entire set of incantations that has to come out of the libraries yet. That's a future book. And they are compiling two encyclopedias, one with all these terms we used, like if we use destiny versus fate, or we use polarity versus duality. What are those terms and what do they mean? So they're creating a two-book series that's an encyclopedia. So there are currently four books being formed, but I am no longer having to do it all. The orders of my students that are becoming masters in literally overnight, they are in the place of total silence of the mind because of the sacred work that they're involved in. They are going into the libraries and are going back and forth in the city. That means that the work of the book, the exact same thing has happened as is happening to light. So we are currently writing four books, and that's beside the book, my brothers and sisters, of the question and answers that we're typing up, of that people are asking me for in-depth information on material. Beside that, we're working on a question-answer book that we've got about halfway typed. So there's five books currently being produced. It's an exponential flow of information. I just somehow have to come up with $50,000 to print these books. But the information is bing there. Mother will provide it, I'm sure. And so we also have this issue of, you know, of the it's no longer in a line only being received by me. It's being received by them all over the place. And let's take a quick break, because I know I didn't properly answer your question. I'm sorry, a little bit scatterbrained, but we'll get there right after this.
Almeen continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almeen is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God-being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almeen, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Key series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Almeen at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today. The world of mysticism has yet another reason to rejoice. Almeen has authored another manuscript of profound knowledge. It's entitled Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of the Mysteries of Isis. Through a time travel tunnel linking Ireland and Egypt, Isis has sent a small group of masters to prepare for the day when the mysteries would once again be released to the world to restore balance and enhance life. They established the Order of the White Rose to guard the sacred objects and the secrets of Isis. In an unprecedented event heralding the advent of a time of light, these mysteries are released for the very first time. Packed with truly thought-provoking information, this book is bound to have an indelible impression on not only the reader, but on global New Age philosophy. To reserve your copy of this groundbreaking work, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016.
We are now in our final section of our show, and we want to get as much information in for you as we can. Did I answer your question, or was there more?
No, you didn't, which you actually acknowledged yourself before the break. But what I was simply asking about is how this collective accessing of information by the various oracles and yourself is, well, what coordinates it, or how is this streamlined?
Well, you're right about that, because, I mean, if they're all accessing different libraries at different times, and there is an overlap, so let me explain it. So we're basically, the entire cosmos has gone to that hundredth monkey syndrome, you know, that we often discuss, that if one monkey knows something, that doesn't mean all the monkeys know it, but when you have 100 monkeys know it, well, then all the monkeys start to know it. It's exponential then. So we are in that place. Well, when one oracle picks something up, all the oracles start to pick it up. And when I'm working with a specific library, I don't have to send an email or I don't have to send a fax. For instance, let's say we're working with the libraries of the swallows. All of a sudden, everybody is picking up things regarding the swallows. They're having visions regarding the swallow libraries. They're seeing visions with swallows in it and so on. So all over, it's instantaneous. So we're living in this hundredth monkey syndrome, because the exponential flow of information, from one point it goes in a sheet outwards, filling everything in a field. It doesn't go from me to another by fax and then from them to another by fax. And so there is some overlap. Some of them are having visitations to these libraries and to Mother's Palace before it actually occurs. And so, you know, when their information comes in, I know, hey, wait a minute, I'm a little behind schedule. I just haven't caught up with whatever it is they're seeing. And I have to stack it and file it. And, you know, I don't quite even know what's coming, so I don't know what to file it in. So I have to remember it. And so I've been dealing with about 40 pages. Well, you are in the office. What do you think? I mean, it's about 40 pages a day.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, it's an average. I mean, it goes more than that, too. I've been receiving about 40 pages of faxes a day from the oracles on what they are receiving. And so I have to sort it and file it, but I don't have a sorting system because I haven't accessed the information yet. I'm, you know, still behind schedule because I have to translate these things. So it's been, in a way, more challenging for me than just to sit down in a place of emptiness and write these books myself. But in another way, it's exactly the way it should be. I need to be the hub of a wheel, and they are the spokes, and we're producing a wheel that's, you know, that's growing. And so the orders are one by one by one. They're writing the books. I just have to put the information together, because somebody in Denmark isn't going to know. You know, there's a whole book for the European masters coming out. We're just waiting for that order to be called, and it's possibly going to be the beginning of next year, but then again, everything surprises me with time. However, the European masters will have their own order there. You know, there's the Order of the Red Spider in Scheveningen in Holland, and there's the Wild Swans libraries on the island of Fyn, I think that's how you say it, F-I-N, in Denmark. You know, there's German libraries, there's French, there's all of those countries have their own libraries. They're going to produce a book, and I've already seen it. Because, see, I see the books before they come because I have to commission the artist to paint the paintings for them. And this book is the magic that comes out of these libraries. Things like that Jean Galabruc device that we spoke of yesterday, that's a whole other book. Just the magical devices to enable us to live in this new reality, it's their tools of grace. They're tools to help us deal with it. So there is an overlap. Some of them are a little ahead of me and some are a little behind, but they're writing the books with their experiences to a very large extent. And another example of this, Ruchir, which maybe on our next show, we can deal with this and I can speak with the folks about what Mother's Palace looks like. Mother and Father have this huge throne room. There are different chambers. That which I have seen, and I've seen a lot, it's exquisite. But the masters all over the world that are my students are going back and forth and back and forth between this reality and the city, and I'm compiling their experiences into a unified description. For example, the day before yesterday, the Oracle Karen was able to see the foundations of the Holy City. And it's under the city itself, and it's made from huge gold beams. And there's a group of giants there that are in charge of those foundations to keep them in order and so on. So, you know, some of our oracles are actually engineers. And so it's been very helpful. They've been producing engineering drawings. Very, very helpful. But the oracles are coordinating. They're seeing the same hall. They're seeing the same rings on Mother's finger, same rings for Father. All of them are seeing the sacred fire that was, in fact, gotten out of the libraries. It was in a red stone. It was out of the libraries that we mentioned earlier in the show, the libraries near Australia of the White Octopus. That library had within it the sacred fire. I don't even know what that means. I mean, I have been skimming the surface, but it burns next to Mother and Father's throne and out of the stone. Many of them are seeing the same thing. And so, you know, it's group mind, group heart. And we just have a minute or so here, so if I may, I'll just tell our listeners about this one heart, one mind situation, because why is it that the orders, this is a lot of work for them. You know, they all have their jobs that they go to. They are like ordinary human beings in the street, although they are, some of them, not even in the human kingdom. So why is it that they are choosing to do this extra work on top of it? Well, besides the obvious reason of the blessings, when an order has one heart only, which we've had up until this point, there isn't the impetus, there isn't the binding force, there isn't the structure. When they have a project that they do together, it creates one heart, one mind. And that is different. That is called divine sovereignty. And when an order who might be scattered all over the world or they live in different cities are in one heart, one mind, that is what keeps them together. We're unfortunately completely out of time, so we'll share with you some of these things next week.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almeen's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Velvespada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, Windows into Eternity with Almeen. Please join us again next week.